Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman, another quarantine edition of the pod live from our homes. We covered basketball from our homes, Kevin. It's basketball season. We're back. Hello.
It feels like it never left us, even though it did for 4 months for some reason. Like, I don't know. I felt it was just normal. Like, oh, I just haven't done this. Like, I don't know what I did with all my time like around work before.
Yeah, so the Suns won their first scrimmage 101-88 over the Utah Jazz last night. We're recording this Friday afternoon. Kind of want to start there with just like watching a basketball game. I'm sure fans listening can relate, like as a fan, just watching it. And no matter how intense you are, like you're screaming at the television every play or you're just casually watching, either way, it had to be weird for the people watching as fans. And I'm saying it that way because for me, as someone who is covering it, and by covering it, I mean I'm intensely live tweeting the game while also trying to pay attention as much as possible to like the themes of the game, mostly just because like analyzing every single play is really hard to do while you're covering a game, and you really have to watch the game again if you want to do that. But and also like keeping track of ArizonaSports.com, all this is happening, and this is something that I've been doing for us now for 4 to 5 years, so I'm used to it. But not doing that in particular after 4 months or whatever it was pretty, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it was kind of jarring. What was it like for you from your perspective, just watching the game in the way that you do?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm usually just my work schedule is like I'm generally watching it more as just not on the clock, like I'll tweet and stuff. But to me, it didn't really feel that different. And I'm curious, like, what other fans see, because I'm sure other people were looking at, oh, this feels different, it feels weird, there's no crowd noise. And to me, honestly, it didn't, I wasn't really distracted by that stuff in that way, just because I feel like, I don't know if it's because I've watched NBA teams, college teams practice in empty gyms before, I don't know if it's just like the job, but it really just felt like basketball. And it was it the highest quality? No, but it just felt like a basketball game to me, and it felt like more than a regular preseason game in some ways, just obviously the circumstances. So I honestly felt it was really, you know, kind of the same as always, which I guess is good.
Yeah, I wonder, I'd be interested to like hear from people who, like, this is part of our everyday lives as sports fans, is just sitting at home watching sports. For me, it's never going to feel back to normal until I'm back in the office, like watching these or out at the games covering them. So this part of like working from home is still going to add that layer of not truly getting to what you're saying, which is it's just basketball, which I agree. Like watching it, it's like, oh yeah, like we know this. Like this isn't like we don't have to take a couple minutes to remember what goes on here. Like we know what goes on. But yeah, even with the I have the Sixers and Grizzlies in the background right now as we're talking. And even with the big LED screen in the background and the way the court is shaped differently, none of that really took me out of the game itself, like crowd noise and stuff like that. And that's, I think that mostly has to do with, for me, just being a huge basketball head like you are as well. But what'd you make of all the changes just from a visual standpoint for us? Cause we're not physically there. I thought they were interesting, but I didn't really notice them. It was weird.
Yeah. I think I caught one of the earlier games. And I really like the LED screens like in the background. I think it looks really good, and it doesn't feel like they're just playing in, I don't even know where they're playing, to be honest, where these certain gyms are. So it just looked like maybe a, you know, summer league court but just really nice. The benches with the seats are really cool, like where they have the labels for each player to sit. But yeah, otherwise to me, I was watching the Suns play the Jazz, and I think that was good.
It was good. We can talk about the game now, and we're not gonna make any hot takes off of it. At least I'm not going to. Hey, Kevin, if you want to just shoot your shot right now, feel free. No one's gonna stop you. But for me, I thought there were a lot of general observations from the game. I thought a lot of guys looked certain ways that we can talk about. And for me, the thing that I wrote about off the game was that Monty and Devin and DeAndre, it is a very hard thing as not only someone who just keeps track of the team and sees the quotes, but has them like said to you, to hear people talk about like for 3 days when they have three off days, be like, really intense practice. We've really taken this break seriously. And then they come out super flat in the game. It's really hard to get used to that, but you just do after a while, and then you can't really just buy into them saying how good or bad a practice was. You just really can't, for no matter how good or bad the team is. But with that being said, Monty, time after time, was talking about how intense these practices were. And for me, what kind of flipped my switch to kind of thinking like that, not that this might be a real thing, because I'm not saying they're lying when they say the practice is good or bad. I'm sure it was good or bad, but in terms of how it actually affects the game, to where I thought it could actually affect the game and affect a way where they could actually come out with like a certain level of intensity that beats out other teams, was when DeAndre and Devin just both seemed like, yeah, like I just want to play another team now. Like they were just itching to get back to playing against another team. And I think that's the type of thing that you get to when you're competing like that in practice, because I think something that we're going to be seeing right now, and I think we've seen in the past couple of days and are going to see for the next couple of weeks, is that I think a lot of the teams here, the thing is 90% of the teams here have already qualified for the playoffs, or 80% of them, whatever it is. So they're just waiting for the playoffs. Like these seeding games don't matter to them. These scrimmage games don't matter to them. They want to like get back into it, but at the same point, they're sitting in a hotel room 7 hours a day, if not more. So for the Suns, they were more fresh than the Jazz. They looked in better shape than the Jazz. They looked more engaged than the Jazz. I just thought, like, Javon, Dario, Devin, Mikal, pretty much everyone on the team, like Cam, both Cams, everyone just looked like a step faster than the other team on the Jazz. And it's not something where you would say, Kevin, that the Suns are the more athletic team of the two, but didn't they look like they were far superior athletically in this game? And I think it's just because they were in much better shape and just had the right mindset going in. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, they just looked really crisp. I mean, from ball movement, running sets, you know, DA's three out of the set, to just physically, they were attacking, and the Jazz kind of just looked like they were out there. So, I mean, the results, you know, we won't take anything from the results in that way. But, you know, I think for the Suns and their mindset, like, what's the difference between that scrimmage and like the first game? Like, I don't think there should be any. Obviously they kind of shut down Devin and DeAndre, and I don't know if they would have done that because they were up pretty decent amount late in the game. But I mean, it's all about what their goal is, right? Like, they came there to keep building on what they have, and like Mikal looked really good. But, you know, Devin and DeAndre also look like they haven't taken a step back. So I think that just speaks to how seriously they're taking all this, and not wasting, I guess, this opportunity, even, you know, in these scrimmages.
I could not believe how crisp is a great word. I could not believe the flow that they had offensively without Ricky. Of course, they were practicing without him for a majority of the time. I don't even think we've talked about it on the pod, by the way. Aaron Baines has coronavirus. He is in Phoenix. He had it. It sounds like, Kevin, to me, that he has had it for more than a month. It sounds like he is, and by have it, I mean he is testing positive for it. There's a difference between having it and like being symptomatic, asymptomatic, but he was symptomatic to the point where he was on bed rest for just about a week. And a guy that we all know how tough Aaron Baines is. I don't need to like go on much further about how if he's on bed rest with coronavirus, good Lord, can you imagine if you got coronavirus the way that he had it? So he is in Phoenix still. Jalen LeCue and Eliakobo are away from the team due to personal reasons. And then Ricky Rubio first practiced on Tuesday. He had coronavirus as well. We kind of like just skipped through that because that was that feels like 6 years ago. It was 4 or 5 days ago. If we are just now breaking this news to you listening, oh boy, you got a lot of catching up to do. But to take it back to Rubio, I just think that like with all these guys missing and stuff, for them to just look like they haven't missed a beat, and for the 0.5, just Monty, they really do play like the Monty style of basketball that he wants, especially with 0.5. There were a lot of possessions with the second unit when it was Payne, Carter, Johnson, Kaminsky, and like Sarge, I think. When they were like 10 to 15 passes a possession, it almost felt like it obviously wasn't that high, but it was at least like 7 to 10 when they were just moving that thing around like the horrible college offenses we hate, but in a way that was actually productive towards NBA spacing. And there was one where there were just three passes and then Mikal was coming around a drag screen at the top of the key, and then he just he took two dribbles and laid it in, like, because the lane was open because they were a five out and they were moving the ball all around and everyone was moving, and that's the whole 0.5 thing in a nutshell. So it was just really impressive to see how fluid the offense was, and it wasn't a credit to, not to take anything away from Ty Jerome or anyone else trying to run the offense, like even Book, but it was just them as a team, and it shows how far you can come as a team. I tweeted the other day, like, I just forgot how much I love watching the Heat play Miami because they play as a team the whole time and they move the ball really well and they play team defense. And it's just a reminder of how when no one is playing well individually for the team specifically, you can still, it's pretty basic fundamental basketball that if you play together as a team like that, it can do so much for you. And it's a good reminder for them to know Monty isn't full of crap. is what happens when you do what he says. It works out really well for you.
Yeah. I mean, I was complaining about Ty Jerome, and like that game did nothing for me to make me feel better about his upside, I guess. Like getting blown off the dribble by Conley and Ingles is not something that a point guard should be dealing with. But I mean, he did operate the offense. I'm not sure how much was actually put on him. But yeah, I think just having Frank and Dario healthy, they really did operate like Aaron Baines, like you would if Aaron Baines was your backup center. Floor spacing was good. They were very aggressive. Like Dario even was really trying to get fouls and take it to the hoop. And then obviously Mikal looked really good. Like Euro steps, his jumper looked nice, and going through contact and seeking out contact too. So, I mean, there are a lot of good things that I saw, but I think the biggest thing that I liked is just like defensively, Book, Ayton, for the most part, those guys were like really contesting shots at the rim. Like when guys got by them, there were a couple plays where it was like, well, no one's standing there, and that's probably just mental breakdowns and stuff. But I really thought that, you know, they didn't give them easy shots, and the defense really held up well. And obviously that speaks to just that practice intensity where they did not skip a beat and they were in shape. They have obviously been practicing well. Because you can't, you know, usually that's where you see breakdowns. And aside from like two or three, I thought they did a really good job making it tough on the Jazz, really finishing at the rim.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I rewatched the game this morning, and about midway through the second quarter, I was like, I just kind of had this thought when they were running back on defense, and I was like, this is kind of like when a really good team senses that an inferior team is not quite here to play to their full capabilities, and then they just kind of start beating them in specific ways. Like when Dario just kept just trying to manhandle the guy that was guarding him and taking him into the basket every time. That is a credit to Dario as a player, and it's really great to see him be aggressive and know that when Utah is playing O'Neal or Niang, or in other cases when Bogdanović is healthy, Bogdanović there, he's going to have the strength advantage on these guys, and he needs to take advantage of it with his ball handling by doing that. But at the same time, you should not be able to do that over and over again to a defense, and Mikal should not be able to get to the rim over and over again in that defense, and or against that type of defense especially. And like when Devin was doing his like Chris Paul thing through the middle early in the game, Utah just wasn't there, and the Suns, it almost seemed like they sensed it and knew what they were going to be able to do. And I'm not trying to claim this is like any type of breakthrough or the Suns are like a really good team all of a sudden, but it was interesting to see them win in that way. It was and drawing a lot of fouls at the rim too, I might add. Like they had a lot of free throws. Dario had a couple, Javon had a couple, Devin had a couple, and that's the type of thing that you do against teams that to take it from the perspective of we've seen the Suns play like this. We have seen when the Suns don't play well on defense because they're not 100% there in their head, and it results in a lot of just lazy fouls at the rim once the defensive possession has been messed up already. And that's kind of what we saw out of Utah. And I saw the Jazz Twitter was kind of burning down a bit, but it must be interesting to, as a fan, to see your team in this bubble that has to have a championship playoff mentality. And then in the first game you see, they come out like it's not even a preseason game, like it's a summer league game. You know what I mean? It was, I'm not sure. And then the other thought I had is like, I think the Suns would have done this to almost every team here. And maybe that's a bit audacious to like think they do it to Milwaukee or the Clippers or the Lakers, but I don't know, man. Like, I don't think any teams were just locked in like that for 40 minutes the way that they were.
Yeah, I haven't watched as many games as you probably have. You might have watched all of them to this point, but like I watched Denver, and they have a like lineup of 7-footers. Like, they're just dinking around right now, trying new things, giving bowl moments to play. And like, the Suns were just very businesslike, and it was just, I don't know, it seemed like they were really just engaged, talking to each other positively, but also just their attitude, you could tell even across the country on a TV screen that they were just focused, I guess you could say, and they're not screwing around here. So I don't know. This means nothing when they come out Saturday and play the Celtics and get annihilated or something. But
well, no, the place to kind of take it, I think, is what we always talk about, which is like, okay, can you make this meaningful? And in this situation, can you do this to the team you're supposed to, which is the team that is going to be starting Shabazz Napier, Troy Brown, Thomas Bryant, and the two other starters? I forgot. I think Bonga is one of them for the Wizards on the 31st, which is a week from today. So in theory, like, if you're playing this way and practicing that way, they should not only beat the Wizards, but they should beat them handedly with the way that they played. So I think that that should be the case anyway. And it's how they need to start this. I've said if they want to like really get anything out of this trip, let alone like try and make a run at it, you need to come out in a certain way. And they did in their first game, but it was their first scrimmage game. So can they do it a week from now is the thing. I don't really think the next two scrimmages really matter. Just them getting their feet right in this one was important for me, I think.
Yeah. I did watch the Wizards, and that team is awful. And I watched the Wizards broadcast, and they were talking like, this team could upset anyone. And it's like, if the Suns lose to that team, like, just send Book home right now. Like,
no, I completely agree with you. I think like, that's where I become team, like, okay, just no one get hurt. If we're not going to beat the Wizards, just no one get hurt. Throw Diallo out there. You know what I mean? Like, give Campaign the starting nod. Like, see what he has. If LeCue is there, throw him in there. You know what I mean? Like, okay, if we're not going to take this, like, seriously, because that's the bottom line. If they're taking this seriously and they actually have the right mental approach and stuff, like, you're not going to lose to the Wizards because you have a bad shooting night. That's just not the way it is. And especially with what Monty said, he said yesterday morning before the game was that he believes, and he was like making sure to preface, like, I could be wrong here because like we've never seen this before, but I believe that this environment with the 22 best teams in the league in theory being here is going to bring out the highest level of basketball we have played against this season. And for me, that means the highest level of basketball they've played against since they won 48 games like 6 years ago, because so many of their games, even against really good teams these days, are teams coming in and judge and treating them like they're the Suns, and they're not going to get that in theory here. Let's hit on a couple of players in the game before we head out, just like positives or negatives, like we can just trade off one by one. I mentioned Dario. It was great to see him aggressive with the ball and just using his strength and ball handling in the way that he should in those matchups. He missed a couple open threes. That's fine. It happens. He needs to affect the game in other ways, though, if he's missing those shots, and he did when he was getting to the basket a lot. I thought he was moving his feet well defensively. I thought that he looked a little bit quicker. Again, that could be misleading because of how out of shape or just slow the Jazz looked in general. But I thought he looked good. Who's up for you?
I'll go hit on Frank, who, I mean, he looked sharp too. Relatively for Frank, quick on his feet. Shot looked really good. He looked like an old Channing Frye out there. And I like that. I kind of like want to see more of that kind of duo where they're stretching and playing a little smaller than with Baines and that kind of thing. So I thought that was interesting. Mikal, you can go on Mikal. That's a pretty easy one.
Yeah. I think part of this was just that he had open driving lanes and he was using them, but to the point of him getting open driving lanes and using them, I think that he's always just been a really good finisher around the rim. And watching the game back, he actually missed two buckets in transition that he normally does. So he should have been 8 for 9, and I think he was 6 for 9. But to see him just get those two dribble attacks and finish at the rim with his length and just the way that he uses his length specifically as a finisher is really good. And if he's hitting like 8 foot, 6 foot touch shots, which is something I've noted on him since before the draft, is that like he just has a knack for really good touch that you can spot. And if that actually turns into something for him as like a finisher from like the short mid range to the mid range area, so like 5 feet to 15 feet, that's really interesting for his game and something we're going to continue to monitor. The opening play of the game was one of those sets that was designed for Kelly, and then he just took it to the dribble to his left anyway, and then made a 6 foot pull up. It was really good to see. It was interesting to hear Monty say, like, defensively, I thought he made a few gambles, which you never think of like Mikal being like a negative defensive player. That's not what he was saying, but then he made a few negative plays. I went back and watched, and like, yeah, there are times where he just swipes at it a little bit too much, but he was great. And he's a huge part of what's going, if DeAndre continues to improve the way that he has so far and Devin does, which we're almost 99% sure that Devin's going to do that. DeAndre, I'm much more confident than I was a year ago. I'll say that. Mikal's like the next one up, obviously, that can really take this to another level.
I guess I'll hit on Ty Jerome.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Oh, boy. I counted 6 blow-bys by slow dudes.
Did you have a whiteboard, Kevin?
No. This is just in real time. I probably missed some.
It's real tough for him, man. It's just tough.
The two shots that he hit were like Devin Booker tough shots, so that's good. But also, you don't want Ty Jerome taking Devin Booker tough shots.
One at the end of the first half. Sorry to cut you off. The one at the end of the first half was the epitome of like, how do you react to this? He tried to get by, I think, Clarkson, and made absolutely zero progress on him. But then just made a really tough 20-footer on the baseline, and it's like, great shot, Ty. Or wow, Ty, you just couldn't get by Jordan Clarkson even a little bit. Like, however you want to interpret it, you know?
Yeah, and the worst thing about him, like, again, he ran the offense. It looked good when he was there, but there were defensive possessions where he would call a switch for no reason when he could have gone under a screen, or it just, like, didn't need to be done, and he just screwed up. I don't know if it was the other guys on the court, but it wasn't communicated well and it just broke down. And that stuff to me is like, why is that just, he hasn't played with these guys? I don't know. He just didn't look like he knew what to do. And that was kind of concerning. If he's, you know, the guy you want to be your backup point guard right now. So I thought we can go off that and just say that, like, Campaign is definitely going to have a chance to be the backup point guard next year. Like, he can make an impression right now. Monty gave him minutes. They're playing small, sometimes with three guards. And I think, like, just watching 2 seconds of him already, it's like, well, yep, he's in that competition.
Payne can create space and hit a shot. And it's like the Elfrid Payton, he can actually, like, provide for people off the dribble and make things happen as a ball handler kind of thing, where it just opens your eyes. And, like, seeing Payne, when the shot clock was winding down, he got the ball, just take three dribbles and then create enough separation on, like, a crossover to pull up from the elbow and hit a jumper. That's just not something they've had at the position, I guess, since, like, Jamal Crawford. But Payne's a different type of player, obviously. To take it back to Jerome, though, yeah, he's just skittish. Like, that's the best word to describe it, both on offense and defense. He's very active, but a lot of the time it's just hard to kind of peg where it's at, you know?
Yeah.
It's just difficult to – it's easy to tell that he's trying to get himself in the right spots, but it's so often out of place and in the wrong spot that it's just going to – I think it's just going to take a bit for him. He just needs to kind of get a – I saw someone describe it today, like, he got thrown into the fire, and, like, he's just going to need to keep getting thrown into the fire for a while here. And then after he's gotten, I don't know, what's a fair barometer, 30 games, 15 games of, like, legit playing time, and if he's still moving around like this, that's when I think you really throw up the alarm bells. And I think that was kind of a miniature version of that, is kind of what happened with him in the midway through the season when he was getting time still, and then at a certain point Monty had to call enough is enough. But Payne played well. I liked the big fella. I thought that watching the game back today, he had a couple of possessions in the third quarter where he set a good screen, rolled to the rim hard, got to the rim a couple of times and didn't get the ball still. But it was just one of those things to see how he was moving and things like that offensively, and then just running the floor. I think you noted a possession where he sprinted down the floor and everyone missed him.
Yeah.
I think he's learned by now that he's just got to keep doing it. It's not one of those, like, immature young big man things where it's like, I'm going to stop running now because I didn't get the ball. I think he's past that, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, he ran down the floor. I mean, that was kind of an example of, like, Rudy Gobert made no – Rudy, like, looked ahead and saw him, and he's like, I'm just jogging still. Like, it's fine. But, yeah, I don't know if you think he looks skinnier. He looks skinnier to me, which, like, for him and being able to switch and all that might be a good thing if you're
– I think that's his ideal frame.
Yeah.
I think that – he has enough natural strength to hold up on the block. He's never been a guy that's gotten bullied on the block. Now, for him, I just think he's always been more of a finesse guy physically. And I know we talk about that with the way that he plays, but I just think physically he's never going to be a super overpowering guy anyway. So I kind of like where he's at right now for me. And he just seemed quicker, and I think this is the more ideal version of him. And if it means less of him being able to get the ball from 12 feet and then taking 2 power dribbles and getting it to 4 feet and being Shaq, I'm fine with it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, though, like, I think before this coronavirus thing happened, like, there were times where he would hit, like, 34 minutes or something and Monty needed to keep playing him. Or even in the first half, he just, like, would get gassed. And, like, if he's carrying less weight and if he's in better shape, I think you're going to be able to play him 36, 38 minutes if you have to. He's going to be holding up on defense better. And like you said, if he's rolling to the rim, he's still a really strong dude. And if he just has, like, 5-10 less pounds of muscle, so be it. Like, he has the touch. He's strong enough, I think. He'll be just fine. And yeah, that is a good point about his, like, what his ideal frame should be, maybe.
Especially if he's shooting, like, 2 to 3 threes a game now, you know?
He's
a little bit more. We didn't bring that up, fun. But yeah. I thought it was just, like, it was a birthday present. It was like, okay, here you go. we'll run the set and you can take it. But Monty said he wants them to shoot it if they sag off, and they sag off, Kevin. We learned in these Brooklyn games when Kenny Atkinson told Jared Allen, you are going to stand at the free throw line, and then you're going to keep backing up if he comes towards you, and you're going to dare him to do something with that space, and it screwed with his head a couple of times. We can talk about it later. I think that's a discussion for a week or two from now. If he's actually taking them here, we can talk about what our thoughts are and how many he should be taking and that type of thing. But obviously it should be a part of his game. We saw how much it helped with Baines and Kaminsky. It will help them when he's taking them. It just depends on his mentality. And look, he made one in this game, and what did he do a couple possessions later? He was still rolling hard to the rim and setting the screens way he should and stuff. It was great. So,
yeah.
But it was fun. I'm very happy that we have actual basketball to talk about and look forward to that being the case. Hopefully the Zion exception and all these people. Are you getting nervous, Kevin? I'm trying not to be that guy on the timeline, but just the fact that we had, like, it's such a successful bubble right now and, like, no positive tests is an amazing achievement. And then to just kind of be like, you know what? Yeah, 0 to 4 days. And it's like, the way that Shams worded that tweet was, like, it can be up to 4 days or as low as, like, 12 hours or whatever he said. And it's like, how do they distinct that, whether your name rhymes with Shmion Shmilliamson or not? Like, you know, it's like, come
on. Doing so well. They're doing so well.
See, you can't get cocky.
Don't get cocky about your coronavirus protocols.
Yes, or you will get the LeBron James Game 6 meme face thrown in your face as, like, when I see that Zion, when coronavirus sees that Zion Williamson is coming back to the bubble with no quarantine period. Like, you know what I mean? Come on, guys. We're doing so good. Okay. We'll be back next week to talk about the start of the season. We'll have two more scrimmage games. The Suns play on Sunday and Tuesday in scrimmages. Those are on ESPN 620. If you want to listen to them, if you want to watch them, it's on Fox Sports Arizona. One of those might be on Fox Sports Arizona Plus. I'm not exactly sure, but a lot of people are still asking if these are on TV or on radio, and they are on both. It's cool to see. And we'll talk about those and, like, what we're looking forward to leading up to the regular season, starting with, please beat the Washington G League Wizards. Please, let's do that first.
Isaac Bonga for MVP.
Oh, no. No, it's Bull Bull, Kevin.
Okay.
Dated reference. Bye, everyone.